we're recording.
Become promiscuous in an adult seat, didn't he?
And he ate all the porridge at the other router's house.
Okay, who have we got? You're still there? Troy? William?
Are we going through our tests, or are we doing that later?
I haven't heard anything.
You're going through.
Oh, there he is. Okay, all
there.
It's okay,
we'll
be fine.
Okay. Module 4 is not a terribly difficult one. It's kind of interesting because you get to see what the other routers do to each other. When you complete this, you should be able to enable and disable CDP. Ooh, that's hard. Use the show CDP neighbors command and understand C, which is even better. It's fine to use it, but it's nice to understand it as well. Determine the neighborhood devices that are connected to each local interface. Gather network address from neighbor devices that use CDP. We do our telnet connections across the routers. Now, this is not the direct console connection.
Right.
You have a direct connection to one of the machines or an Ethernet port into one of the machines. You can then telnet in and do the configuration remotely, as long as there is some configuration there initially. Suspend telnet sessions so you can leave them active, nice security holds. And do some troubleshooting on remote terminal connections. Now, first thing with CDP, how often is it used, do you think? In the real world?
As little as possible.
Correct, and why?
Because it's a gaping security hole.
It is indeed. There is no authentication or anything.
So it's like Bluetooth.
Well, it's worse because it actually screams out, I am a 2600 and I've got drugs. And
oh, really?
Goes, oh, cool.
I'll come over to your house.
But basically, unless you shut it down or unless if you turn it on, it broadcasts promiscuously on every interface.
Oh, all the time.
Every 60 seconds, 90 seconds?
Something
like that. It says in here, we'll find out when we get there. I can't remember.
Every so long.
So why is it even in there? Is it from a...
It's an ease of use. No, it's an ease of use. If you set up CDP, you can immediately discover what other equipment's directly connected. And
then you turn it off once you've actually found out.
Well, you're supposed to... You only turn it on when you need it.
Yes.
But it's Cisco... If everything you've got is Cisco, you can find out all the equipment you've got.
Yes.
And, of course, everything you have will be Cisco.
Of course.
Just under 384.3.
Okay, that's good. I'll go through those ones with you a bit later on.
Okay, good.
So we're talking about CDP. It's a layer 2 protocol that connects a lot of physical media to the upper network layers. It's a proprietary protocol of Cisco's, which is why everything has to be Cisco to use it.
Right.
Currently, version 2. Was released in the iOS version 12.0 and above. So if you're running 11 on any of these machines, you won't be able to use CDP version 2 anyway. CDP version 1 is the default, and it's enabled by default, which is not good. Okay, when the device boots up, CDP starts automatically and allows the device to detect neighborhood devices using CDP. Okay, and as it's a proprietary data link protocol, it doesn't matter what router protocols you're using, it will still function. So you can be running IPX on one router and IP on another and AppleTalk on another, but CDP will still discover the devices because it works below that layer. I'm not sure how much traffic it generates. But, anyway. Each device advertises at least one address on which you can receive SNMP traffic messages. Alright, so it's using SNMP discover the information.
Simple network protocol. Except it isn't simple.
No, it is pretty complex. What's the other one there?
Snap
ISP?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Or Snap or something.
No. There's one of the things.
How does Snap come into it?
Snap's just a different type of Ethernet frame.
That's the protocol it actually uses to send and receive.
No, Snap is just an Ethernet frame.
There's a type field in Ethernet, and one of the types is Snap.
Okay.
Yeah. You've got the 802.3. There's Ethernet 2, and there's Snap. Alright, so first thing you'll do is use the show CDP neighbours once you've hooked some gear up in the lab, and it will then exchange that CDP, or from the exchange CDP information, display what devices are connected. And what it'll do is give you device ID, the local interfaces, the hold time, what capabilities are on the router, so it has a look at the iOS and works that out, the platform and the port ID that's connected.
Can I just make a point here?
Yep.
Make sure your interfaces aren't in shutdown mode or CDP won't work.
It will only work on active ones, which is probably where the security comes in, because by default things are closed down.
Yeah, so I'm saying if you want to see CDP work, make sure you bring your interfaces online.
Yes.
And that means having cables plugged into your Ethernet ports.
Yeah, so just plug it into, where, if you can, if you've got two machines, plug it into either router. capabilities in CDP version 2, above and beyond the ones I just said, is VTP management, native VLAN, full and half duplex. So, V stands for trunking protocol, virtual trunking protocol?
I'm not sure.
It's a trunking protocol anyway. Okay. Waiting. Still waiting. There it is. We did two, of course. Right. So how do you set this up? There's a whole heap of commands that are listed in the curriculum. I'm not going to go through all of them. But probably the key things are you have to turn the CDP on. So use CDP run, and that globally turns CDP on the router. So
it's all the interfaces. If they're
no, it just sort of loads it. You then need to go CDP enable is used to enable the CDP on a particular interface.
Okay, so you get into the interface, then you run CDP enable as a command.
Yes.
I thought if you haven't changed it, though, the interfaces are, once you do a CDP run, if you haven't changed the default configuration, they will, all the interfaces will run by default.
Well, that's what it just said.
Yeah, it said you said CDP is on by default.
It is, but if you turn it off, you've got to turn it on.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you're coming up with a startup, if you've erased the startup, it will be on.
That's right. But if you've turned it off for security reasons, you've got to then turn it all back on again.
Yeah, okay.
You can then show CDP traffic, which is really interesting to do. You voice users will love it. Jabber, jabber, jabber.
It's not that bad, actually. It's pretty.
You're used to it.
Try debug all in.
I've done that on occasion, actually.
Oh, that's scary. It's terrible to look at.
Yeah.
Still. Okay, some other common ones to use is clear CDP counters. Show CDP entries, show CDP interfaces and the type numbers. Show CDP neighbours, which will show all of the neighbours that are connected. We've got lots of output. Nice. I think this is better if you go through this and actually do it on the rerouter than just real router and just read this stuff out. There is an ELAB for it, but we won't do that. We can just set up a default configuration on the two routers, which is good practice anyway, and run through all the CDP commands. Right. CDP was designed and implemented as a simple low overhead protocol. The CDP frames are fairly small. I don't know exactly how big they are. Be worth having a look. And you can use this information to create a map of the connected devices. I wonder if we could do, if we plug anything into the real network, they get upset with us and shut us down. No, we won't do that.
Can't they do some exemptions for this class, or are they...
No, definitely not. The worst thing you could do is have students hooking into the main network.
And they're just running amok.
Yeah, and it's very easy to do. Very easy to do.
What do you mean to run amok?
Oh, you can completely shut down Kurt's network.
That happens by itself usually.
That's true.
That's an automatic feature.
Yeah.
But the Firefox was highly secure when they shut the network down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a specialised
in aura. Okay, any guesses on how to disable CDP?
No CDP.
Close.
No run CDP. No CDP.
Closer.
No CDP run.
What's it? No CDP run.
Remember you type in
CDP run turn on, so no CDP run turn off.
Yeah, I've learned that
at
most things
prompt?
you do know.
At the router.
Right.
Router.
No, privilege. Yes, privilege exec. Yes. The thing with a number sign.
Global. Yes, global, not in any of the interfaces.
No.
That won't work in an interface, but if you went into one of the interfaces, you'd probably shut down the CDP on that
interface.
One.
Yes. I've learned that anything with a number sign after it means yes, you can change it.
Well, it means you're in privilege.
That's right.
Okay.
The
troubleshoot CDP. Turn off and get on it. Several commands. There's clear CDP table for your start from the beginning. Right, get rid of all the entries over there.
Yeah.
Clear CDP counters. One of the interesting ones is show CDP traffic and you can watch what's going on. Show debugging, debug CDP adjacency, so it'll look at CDP directly adjacent to your router, see who's directly connected. Debug CDP events, you can go into IP and packets, the timer, CDP hold time. Do we know what we need to be by hold time?
The time between information against
things or
No, it's normally used whenever you see the hold time is if you don't receive any update within this amount of time, throw away the entry. This is so that things that you disconnect eventually disappear.
Right.
Out of the table.
Yeah.
So they don't stay there indefinitely.
Yep. In a switch, that's normally kept to very, very short amount of time. I don't know exactly what it would be, but you would probably leave it less than a second. So if you don't hear anything from a machine that's hooked up to your switch, it'll throw it away within a second or so.
It usually says in the manual, switch.
Well, it'll be in the iOS.
If it comes with a manual.
some of the cheap switches, they just sort of hang on to something indefinitely until it decides it can't reach it, and then it'll chuck it
eventually.
Do you just pull the power out, though? Isn't it?
Oh, if you pull the power out, everything's gone. But if you just rip a cable out, sometimes it'll
It's because all the time when you're doing real stuff, you'll walk up to the switch and you'll unplug a machine from one port and plug it into another.
Yeah.
And you want that to be sort of pretty well immediate.
Yeah.
So as soon as you yank the cable, it'll put the port back into learning state.
Yeah.
And you jam the cable in somewhere else.
And you've got all one. Yeah.
And
as soon as it'll detect that there's been something connected with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Telnet. Wow, we all should know lots about Telnet. What layer does Telnet operate at? Apart from Kerry.
Layer 2.
Applications. Because
it's
an application.
Seven.
Application.
Remember, it's the other way around. Physical is one. Code 7.
Application.
Yep.
Yeah, 7.
It's an application.
But it talks to the other layers. Like,
well, it has to. Everything. Remember that whenever you've got something working at layer 7, it has to have all the other layers in there. Because you put layer 7 on its own, what's it going to do?
Nothing.
Well,
it's
got nowhere to send anything.
It's going
to
be like
Windows. So when you've got a router and you say it's a layer 3 device, so what's that about Windows?
Sorry.
It's going to emulate.
I said it was going to emulate Windows. He said, if you've got the application all by itself, what's it going to do? I said, it's going to emulate Windows. It's all right.
It's going to do nothing.
Yes.
Well, actually, that's better than Windows. Windows just crashes.
You don't have application now, do you? If I could get all the applications and everything worked properly on the Mac, I would.
And then it went bang.
I would use a Mac.
Oh, we've got another one. You can do that too.
Yeah, see, so you can kill another. We'll pull the other one to pieces if you want to have a look at it too.
Can stick your finger in the
CRT has been disbanded for a while.
So back onto this. This is we're dealing here, I think, with troubleshooting. So Telnet works at the application layer, which means, of course, it's got all the others. As I was saying, a router is a layer 3 device, but that means it automatically has layer 2 and layer 1, doesn't it?
Yes.
All right, the switch works at layer 2, so it always has layer 1.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always got the layers below, otherwise it's not going to do anything. Some of the other ones we use when you're telnetting is, say, ping and trace, or trace route. What layer do they work at?
The network layer.
They do indeed. Because they are just doing simple IP echo requests and...
they're not dealing with the MAC addresses.
Nope.
So they're only dealing with IP addresses. So it's the
router equivalent of that sort of thing is show IP route. Alright, so that on a router will show you the path being taken by your IP.
Okay.
To look at things in the data link layer, you would normally use ARP, for example, to have a look at your ARP tables and that sort of thing. On a router, you do show interface, and that'll give you information on that interface.
You can also show the ARP cache if you want to.
Well, yeah, I'm talking more of the router-specific commands. So this is things that you don't have on most machines that is built into the iOS. But yes, you can have it at the art tables, of course. Right, telnetting. It is so difficult.
Is it?
It is.
I was going to say, if you type telnet.
To telnet,
no, to top you.
You use, well, you've got to be in the iOS exec mode to go from one Cisco device to another. You don't need to either connect or telnet commands to establish it. For example, you can, from the exec mode, you can just type connect and then the router name, if you've set up the host tables, of course. But you can also just type the host name. So the example I've got here is Paris.
Yeah.
From the prompt, you can go connect Paris, which will telnet in there. You can type just Paris on its own if it's in the host table, and it will telnet in there. You can type in just the IP address, and it will telnet in there.
So you basically,
or you can type telnet Paris if you really want it.
You're basically coming into one router and then bouncing over to another.
Yes,
right?
You're just using the router as a terminal.
Okay.
The disadvantage with that is if your name resolution is broken or not working and it isn't in your host table, it's going to sit around for about a minute going,
yes,
where
DNS,
is
DNS, DNS. Unless you type in no DNS lookup.
Yes.
From the global configuration mode.
That's right.
Which is always a nice thing to put in when you get to the point where you're cut and pasting your configs in.
Yes.
Right, you just cut your basic config directly in.
Yeah.
Stick that at the top as well. And that'll save all these delays when you make a typo and it goes off doing its DNS search.
Yeah, that's frustrating. It was doing it to me the other day, but no one had to do that.
Okay, so if you've got Paris in your DNS, it'll look it up. Right, so you can use DNS or you can have it in the host table. Now remember, the host table is only relative to that particular router. And it's a straight substitution. So in this case, if the IP address is right, when the command Paris is parsed by the router, it actually turns that into 131.108.100.152. Okay, so it's actually no, there's no real name lookup, it's just a mapping. This name means this number. So it doesn't work anywhere else. It can also get awfully confusing. If you've got a large configuration of routers and you telnet it into one, then you telnet it into the next, and you telnet back to another one, and you telnet over that one, you can get lost pretty easily. So it's probably not a very good idea to go through multiple jumps, because then you'll forget how to come back again. You can just end the session, of course, but you're much better off setting up separate telnet sessions to each of the
different routers you want to get to, instead of bouncing through them all.
Yep. Okay, you can also disconnect. Well, everyone knows we can disconnect, but you can suspend a session. Okay, so if you're doing something, you just want to stop for the moment and go and get a coffee, or you want to move off to another route and just check something and come back to it, you don't actually have to end the session, which means you keep the command history and those sort of things.
Right.
So it can be very handy. How do you do this? I've actually never actually bothered doing it.
Control shift
six,
and then
X.
Yeah, that's right.
That's an easy one to remember,
isn't it? Just
well, control shift six is control carriage, which is the about the only control letter that you don't use in normal terminally. And X is
just suspend, exit, whatever, partially exit.
Partially
so
exit.
It's carrot
X.
Control shift.
No, control shift
six.
It's control carrot,
which is carrot.
Oh,
control carrot. Yep.
Yeah.
Which is ASCII code 31, yes. You wanted to know.
Yeah.
And then X will suspend.
Reminds me, just while I think of it, have you got a table of ASCII Braille or stuff that's actually sent to a printer?
It's in the Duxbury documentation.
Is it? Okay, thanks.
It's okay. Called amabri.txt.
Who?
AMRBRI,
okay.
VRL or something .txt.
I'll go and have a look. Okay, so that's how you suspend. You can also do a show sessions and show which ones you've got left hanging. Yep, definitely
most,
worth doing.
Most people forget how to do it and they just crack open a couple more copies of telnet. But for this
much better
module,
idea.
You will have to know how to do it. So, but yeah, crack open a few telnets, but also know how to suspend.
All right, so here we are. We can have all of these wonderful telnet sessions hung, suspended, leaving gaping security holes and not very nice. You can limit it, and that's a command that's a little bit difficult to remember. It's called session limit.
So is it something like you would you use telnet to do something and then you remember, you think, and you better chop it off after you finish doing what you say.
You should,
don't leave the thing open.
Yeah, you should just tell me and do what you need to get off.
Okay.
Or if you really have to have multiple ones open, on the machine you're using,
yeah,
have several telnet sessions open to each router that you need. Like, don't suspend or telnet to one, telnet to the next, telnet to the next, telnet to the next.
Have individual telnet.
Have
to each
individual
router.
Telnet sessions to each of the routers you want to talk to. Right? Don't set up multiples, it gets very confusing and doesn't really achieve anything. Resume, by the way, unsuspends them.
Does it?
Yes.
It
okay.
Just seems to me like a useful thing. It just that you have to remember to.
Yeah,
off
if
it
you leave them hanging open, it's
oh, no,
not a good thing.
Oh no, I wouldn't leave them open.
There is
and
no
it,
doubt
it,
an easy
it,
way
it
to break
to
in.
To what you've got as well.
Well, that's right, and it's very hard to follow what you've done and oh, did, which command am I typing on which router and.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Where if I told it to get to this one.
Yes. Now I want to just move back two
I'm
routers, or is it three routers?
As I said, running commands from one machine to the other,
yes,
on the same one, I think we might
not
do that.
It's handy to do it for troubleshooting, but you're not actually doing much on it. So if you telnet into one router, then telnet into the next, you know, it's an immediate check that everything's working.
In fact, one of the reasons why the router name is in the prompt is so you know where the hell you are.
Yes.
And one of the common things that cyber people don't do is read the prompt. So they'll key the wrong commands into the wrong telnet session.
Ugh.
And that can involve erasing the wrong files or the wrong configuration.
Yes, and
from
and
the wrong router.
Yeah.
And you'll tend to hear some
and being
curses
in
and
a
swear.
Particular interface prompt and typing a command that doesn't belong to that interface can do some really hairy things. So you must always be aware of what the prompt is saying. Is it in config mode? Is it in config IF
maybe
mode?
Maybe that is why in the labs they go, What is it? Putting
yeah.
What does
this mean?
What does this mean?
One of the favourite exam questions.
And to be fully understand, this is the name.
One of the favourite exam questions is you will have, what is the command to do such and such?
Yeah.
And they will have router, greater than, router, number sign, router, config, number sign, router,
yes,
config,
yes.
IF, number sign. And the command will be the same all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not interested in what the command is, they want to make sure you know
which
mode you're in,
yes,
when you
yes.
type this command in. Because it is absolutely critical and it's easy to overlook.
The other thing to keep in mind is when you are managing these routers, if you are doing it remotely, which I have on occasion, do not
all
shut
the
interface down. You are telneted in on.
Have you ever done that?
Yeah, everybody's done that.
Everyone has.
And you will too.
You go, shut down, and you get no prop back. And you go, shivers.
And how do you get back in?
You ring the person up and go, can you drive in and just power cycle that router for me?
As
yeah,
long as
no worries, big fella.
Please.
As long as you've saved your config before that.
Yeah, well, this is.
Or not save it after you've typed the shutdown command in.
Well, you make sure there's a sensible config in before you get started so that when they power cycle it,
at least you can get back
you
in.
You can get
yeah.
something back and get back in, and then you can sort of redo it again.
Ooh, that
would
annoy
them. Okay. Testing with the ping command.
Oh.
Really easy. You just ping the interface, whether that be usually the IP address so that you know exactly what one you're pinging to. But if you've got the host name table set up, remember it's going to do that substitution. So if you go ping Paris, it will put an IP address in. But which IP address? Right, it'll be the closest interface to you. What you won't be able to do is if you're coming in on the Ethernet and there's a serial going out, and for some reason you're not getting across that router, right? Pinging to that router's name will only check as far as the incoming router, incoming interface.
Yes, yes.
If you want to check to make sure you're getting through the router to the next interface, you have to type the IP address of that outside interface.
Yes.
So when you're pinging and doing trace routes, it's usually best to actually type the IP address of the interface you want to check to.
Not the router itself.
Not the router itself. Well, it's not really the router itself.
Well,
sometimes a router can resolve to multiple IP addresses because it's got multiple interfaces.
And it usually
so
does.
Yeah, that's sort of the general point of the router. But you want to make sure that when you are pinging, you are pinging the right interface through the right set of other interfaces. In fact,
you usually want to pinging the one on the other side.
The funky
you?
Bits
yeah.
of the ping actually let you tell it where the ping is coming from. That sort of heavy voodoo that happens later.
Yes.
You can actually set the source address and what interface you're going to send the things from.
In fact, do it when you set up the labs and you're doing the thing. I'm not sure if there's an actual lab on it, but ping to the host name, right, and you will see it only go to the closest interface to you. Then ping to the IP address of that closest interface, you'll see it's the same.
Yes.
Then ping to the opposite side, right, the Ethernet, for example, on the opposite side of the router.
And one of the things you will notice if you're listening carefully or staring at your screen is the more interfaces you go through, the higher your latency should be. And if that's not happening, then you've got a problem. If you're pinging over a modem link and you're getting latencies of 2 milliseconds,
you're not pinging,
pinging over a modem link.
Yes.
But that's just something to be aware of, that if you're not seeing the results you expect, read what you're getting back and make sure that you're doing the right thing, because you might not be doing what you think you're doing.
Yeah. Okay, the report's back on the ping from a router, when you're actually working on the router, slightly different to Windows and Unix and Linux. Not very different, but slightly. An exclamation mark indicates a successful echo, so it'll send a whole lot of echo requests, 5 normally by default, and you'll get 5 exclamation marks back if it is working. Full stops are ones that don't come back, they time out.
With JAWS, big JAWS tip for people, change your exclamation marks so that it says bang. That way when the pings come back, it will just go bang, 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 bang. 5 packets successful.
Comes back success rate under this.
Yeah.
And then it gives you a round trip, min, average, and max. Right, so I'll tell you how fast the fastest one in time, very, very roughly, what the average was and what the longest one was. Okay. But it only does it in milliseconds, so it's pretty rough. Okay, traceroute basically works the same way, not quite, but it goes off and with the time delivered one, hits the first hop, sends back the echo, sets the time to 2, goes through 2 hops, then sends back the destination unreachable message, sets the time delivered to 3, goes off 3 hops, time delivered expires, so it sends back the message until it eventually gets it. And that way you get a trace through the network. How reliable is that as far as working out the path to a particular network or machine?
Not particularly, because it might take the longest path that it can find.
No. Well, the bigger problem is that not all routing links are asymmetric. The packets may go out by Russia but come back by Singapore.
It also routes change. They're consistently changing throughout the network. So if you are going, say, a long distance, it's likely that halfway through you're going to be on a different path. So it really doesn't give you much.
So it basically just gives you a general idea.
Well, it tells you if it's working.
Are you
getting there or are you not getting there? And if you're not getting there, where's it stopping?
Right.
So if you're in a static environment like Curtin, you can get much more static than a university like this, you'll find the routes don't change, so it will give you decent information.
Mm-hmm.
But in the real world, over the internet, no. Okay, for connectivity, but no good for working out the route.
Yeah, if your provider is having problems, which of course Telstra never does, you can actually run a few trace routes about 10 seconds apart and see the routes change. Oh, we're going by Adelaide now. No, now we're going by the Sydney.
Okay.
that's sort of humorous if you're trying to figure out what's broken and why. I mean, usually things will come back online because we've got lots of people running and fixing them, but these things can change.
Okay, well that's basically it. Again, I'll say we're into the modules that are actually interesting. This is all labs. We don't have to sit and read for hours and hours and hours to actually get some fun things to do. So now, need to do CDP, the telnetting, a bit of a trace route, ping, those sort of things. So lots of labs in there which we start now. And, I'll stop this. End of recording.